So, okay, welcome back with a very short delay of 5 minutes. I'm now super happy to introduce Dr. Vanya Vukojevic. He's a postdoc in the Molecular Neuroscience Department at the University of Basel. And I'm very happy that he even agreed to have two talks today, so we will see him again later. For now, he will talk about epigenetics of human memory, and I'm very excited to hear your talk, Vanya.
Thank you very much, Daniela. I would like just to acknowledge the organizers for organizing this very nice workshop and also for giving me the opportunity to come here and to present some of our research and share our experiences when it comes to epigenetic studies. I also want to acknowledge Tanjay and Thomas for giving such a nice overview of epigenomics in terms of mechanisms, methodology, and also at current research. So I will be able to speed up in the beginning with these few introductory slides. So just as a short summary, we in Basel, we are actually two departments, Department of Molecular Neurosciences and Cognitive Neurosciences, that got married 10 years ago via the platform of molecular and cognitive neurosciences, which is a transfacultary platform at the University of Basel. And we try to utilize in translational approach different technologies in order to underpin the molecular mechanisms and cognitive mechanisms of human memory at first line. So we utilize all kinds of tools like fMRI, like EEG studies. We perform high throughput phenotypic testing, memory assessment. Then we use high throughput technologies like microarrays, sequencing. But we also try to translate from or to molecular model systems to in order to study molecular mechanisms like C. elegans or rats. And finally also to patients in the other direction, in a real translational direction with some clinical trials. And historically, our main aims for a very long time focused on genetics of complex traits like human phenotypes. And we saw them as tools to understand biology and also to find meaningful targets as predictors of these complex phenotypes or possible markers and targets for treatment in memory-related disorders. We have also published many publications, just some of them that were assessing genetics of human memory. But however, with the accumulating knowledge in GIVA studies, it's becoming clear that solid the genetic information cannot explain the amount of variability that we observe when it comes to human memory as a very complex and highly variable complex trait. And so several years ago, when the epigenetics hype was on its peak, this was relatively not so old. It's from 2010. Even Time magazine had this front page saying why your DNA isn't your destiny. And we thought that now with epigenetics, we would be able to explain everything that we could not with genetics. I would just want to state here once more that these two, let's say, molecular levels, they are not, they are so tightly connected that you cannot look at one of those without looking at the others. And I think this is really important to keep in mind through all my slides and through the talks that I will be having now and later on. And we try to do this at the MCN department in Basel. So I can just go very fast through these two slides that introduce some epigenetic mechanisms and DNA methylation that I'm going to talk about. But let's just say that the epigenetic mechanisms, they shape the genomic output and they enable an integration of information that is coded in our genome and inherited, but also the environmental input that comes and it's being accumulated during a lifespan, thus giving a plastic output of this, let's say, library of information that every cell comes with. And there are many different epigenetic modifications and mechanisms. For sure, the most known is modification at the DNA level. It doesn't mean it's the most important one, but it's probably one of the most stable ones. It's a covalent modification of the DNA. When we talk about, for example, CpG methylation, very often referred as the fifth base, it takes time to be introduced. It takes also time to be changed, and so on. And it's relatively easily measured. It's more easily accessed than some other epigenetic modifications that are as much as important, if not even more important. They are all tightly connected. And so we just use, let's say, DNA methylation is one of the proxy markers of epigenetic states in cells at given time and given place. Okay, so now I'm going to switch and to talk about some of our studies, and I'm going to present two studies here today. So the first one Thomas already introduced shortly. So I will talk about how epigenetic modifications affect the HPA axis, and more specifically, how these changes are associated to emotional memory performance and also to PTSD risk. So let me start with a very personal moment here. In 1999, I have been living for a few years already in the States and finishing my college and so on. So I decided I visit my grandparents that moved 2 years ago before 1991. They decided to use their apartment in Belgrade. They have been living in Hamburg for a very long time. So I have been there with my family when the NATO campaign against the former Republic of Yugoslavia started. And in the night between 19th and 20th of May, a misguided missile hit the hospital, children's hospital, just across the building where my grandparents were living. And it was very late in the evening. It was around 3, 4 in the morning. I woke up in a shock, basically. There was smoke, fire, heat everywhere. I was covered with glass, dust. I could hear screams, rescue operation, excavations, and so on. My mother looking the members of the family. And it's basically a night that I will never forget. This night has been primed so vividly in my memory that even now when I talk about this, I kind of revive and re-feel those emotions from the past. So why is that? Why are emotionally arousing experiences negative but also positive so vividly encoded? And why do we remember those memories so strongly? Of course, this has some evolutionary advantages because we have to remember these situations and we have to remember how we acted in those situations, because when we encounter similar circumstances, we may be able to expect how the situation will evolve and develop further, and thus react more properly. However, and of course, this is all primed biologically and physiologically. There are systems that enable the change in the physiological status of organism that enables coding of such information in such a vivid sense. But once the danger is away, the system should go to the equilibrium again, because the memory has been coded, and we don't need to be anymore in this aroused state. However, in some cases, in some individuals, if you talk about humans, the stressor is strong enough, the system can be moved from balance for a very long time, and even for a lifetime. And then we have disorders like a post-traumatic stress disorder. So just a very short overview. So it's one of the most common psychiatric disorders. It's characterized by the three main clusters of symptoms, and one of them is they're all kind of related very tightly with traumatic memories, but this uncontrolled remembering, a re-experiencing of memories that is tightly associated to intrusive symptom cluster really suggests that the memory component plays a very important role with this disorder. And we now know also there are a lot of molecular and physiological changes that are, for example, sustained changes in gene expression, neuronal circuits, also brain activity. And one of the most profound changes is the enhanced HPA axis feedback. However, we don't know if those changes are a result of trauma or they are actually representing a risk per se. This is also a very important mark that I'm going to address also later on. So when it comes now to this enhanced HPA axis feedback, that is one of the markers of the PTSD, one of the main players and often reported by different reports is the glucocorticoid receptor gene. And generally, glucocorticoids and glucocorticoid receptor as the main messenger of the feedback loop, they are tightly associated to memory processes. And we have seen in many publications that the timed activation of glucocorticoid receptor is really crucial for memory consolidation and also retrieval. Fear learning and memory, we know this from animal studies, play an important role in PTSD pathogenesis. So it is hypothesized, it may be likely that the GR may contribute to PTSD's risk through modulation of memory processes. And we also knew at that moment that the promoter of the glucocorticoid receptor gene is also regulated through epigenetic mechanisms. And especially I'm going to talk about the binding site of the NGFIA transcriptional factor that is regulated by epigenetic modifications, and this has been shown in rodents and humans before, enabling or the blocking binding of this transcriptional factor that then drives the expression of the glucocorticoid receptor gene. So we then, based on all this previous finding, we decided to examine the role of epigenetic changes or DNA modifications at the glucocorticoid receptor in a population of genocide survivors, and to see if we could actually link these modifications to PTSD risk, but also to memory component or traumatic memories that genocide survivors have experienced. So we have conducted this first study together with Thomas Elbert and Iris Colassa in a population of Rwandan genocide survivors. And for those of you that don't know, in the 1994, the Rwandan Hutu government launched a systematic genocide of their minority Tutsi citizens and Hutus, not willing to take part in the mass killings, and UNO estimated that around 1 million people was killed and 2 million people were displaced during a period of only 3 months. So a set of severe traumatic events, and we then examined this hypothesis in a subsample of Rwandan genocide survivor sample of 162. They were all subjects assessed on spot in Rwanda in refugee camps and tested for PTSD according to the DSM-4 criteria and PDS scale. We have isolated DNA from using origin saliva DNA kits, and we examined then the status of glucocorticoid receptor gene promoter via direct bisulfite pyrrole sequencing. And the site that we focus predominantly is the site where the NGFI a transcriptional factor binds based on previous literature findings. So interestingly, what we could see that the DNA methylation, first of all, at this specific site that was reported to be the main player that determines the binding of the NGFIA was significantly different between genders. And thus we decided then to analyze further separately those effects in men and women. And we could see the DNA methylation at this specific site was negatively correlated with intrusion symptoms in men, but not in women, and so on, specifically on the site where the NGFI-A transcriptional factor binds after correcting for multiple comparisons. So what is also very important to emphasize here that the we could also show that the CpG 3 methylation status was also associated with the lifetime PTSD risk, again only in men, where the risk was consistently higher in men with lower methylation levels. And this was very importantly independent of number of traumatic events. And the methylation itself was not correlated with the number of traumatic events, suggesting that it may be rather a pre-existing risk factor and not really a consequence of traumatic events. So we wondered if this changes, these epigenetic changes that were associated with PTSD risk and predominantly or mainly with the traumatic memories or intrusion symptoms of PTSD, and seeing that they were not associated with the actual trauma load, we wondered if in healthy young individuals the inter-individual variation at this loci could also be associated with, for example, emotional memory performance. So we conducted another study, and this was a study performed in Swiss young individuals. They performed an emotional picture task while in the fMRI scanner. This was a bit a smaller sample. It had around 72 healthy young individuals, and the DNA was isolated and analyzed as described in the previous sample. And what we could see is that indeed there was a significant correlation between recognition memory, but again only in men, at this specific DNA methylation at this specific site, and this was independent of valence, which was also really important. We also saw from some previous studies that memory modulating effects of glucocorticoids can also affect neutral material as well. And so furthermore, we investigated if DNA methylation changes were also associated to differences in brain activation during this recognition task. We could show in a methylation-dependent analysis that revealed a family-wise error multiple comparison corrected positive correlation only in men between methylation levels, so this specific CpG 3 site of the glucocorticoid receptor promoter, and activity during the recognition of previously seen pictures. These associations were observed in the ventrolateral prefrontal cortex and the cuneus. And these regions were involved rather in retrieval attempt and effort rather than only with retrieval success. And furthermore, we could also show in the same population that these DNA methylation changes were negatively correlated with the actual expression of the glucocorticoid receptor gene in the same sample. So to conclude just very shortly here, we could show that the DNA methylation, the specific site of glucocorticoid receptor, correlated negatively with symptoms of traumatic memories and the risk for PTSD only in men. This was not related to the actual trauma load, suggesting maybe a pre-existing risk, and was functionally associated with the glucocorticoid receptor gene expression. We could also show in another population that the methylation, this specific site, also correlated negatively with the recognition performance in healthy men, also independent of valence, and that this was further supported by the functional changes in brain activity during recognition task doing recognition task of previously seen emotional pictures. So In order also to expand these findings and to confirm these findings, we have then later on performed 450K infinium study with in 380 Rwanda genocide survivors from the same population. And we could actually confirm the initial findings that we got with the targeted approach. And then we decided also to integrate on a methylome level, the information we got in these 380 Rwanda genocide survivors. And then we conducted a pathway analysis. And interestingly, the first two pathways that popped up as significantly associated with PTSD lifetime risk were again negative regulation of corticotropin secretion and negative regulation of corticotropin releasing hormone receptor activity. So again, two gene pathways tightly associated with the GR-related regulation of the HPA axis. So we are currently trying to also replicate those findings that came hypothesis-free manner using the gene pathway analysis in another population of similar African descent. It's around 600 survivors. Well, this is Burundi, but it's actually Uganda genocide. We changed this. Yes, I just wanted to emphasize with this follow-up study how important it is also to look in the not only replication, but also to try when doing a replication in a different study to maybe use a different technology as well that also enables a validation of previous findings and so on. And I hope that we could provide enough evidence that the DNA hypomethylation at the glucocorticoid receptor itself, but also of the biological pathways linked to the negative regulation of glucocorticoid signaling is significantly associated with lifetime PTSD risk and in some cases also with predominantly with the, let's say, memory cluster of symptoms of PTSD. Okay, now I'm going to switch gears and I'm going to talk about another study that we have recently conducted. And there we kind of changed a bit the path, and we started from model systems and then we wanted to extrapolate this further to human studies. So among different model systems that we use in the MCN in Basel, we conduct a lot of research on C. elegans. C. elegans is a free-living soil roundworm. It's around 1 millimeter long. It feeds with bacteria in the lab. So these are like bacteria-plated agarose plate. It is a self-reproducing hermaphrodite. It has only around 0.1% of males, which makes also genetic manipulation and genetic experiments crossings together with the fact that the lifetime is around 2 weeks with the generation time of 3 days. This makes things much easier, and the system is very nice when it comes to this type of manipulations. They are completely transparent, and they have a completely determined cellular development. So there are exactly 959 somatic cells, and out of those, 302 neurons. So you can imagine how important the neuronal system for C. elegans is, because 1/3 of its cells are neurons. It has a relatively a complex genome when it comes to the number of genes. Current estimation is around 22,000 of genes, so this is very comparable to the human genome. It has a fixed number of synapses during development. They're all mapped, and there are databases that one can use to look at, to look in this connectome. And what is also important is being that they're small, easy to cultivate, and they have a short generation time. One can generate a lot of transgenic animals in a very short period of time and then do testing in order to test some, let's say, mechanistical assumptions about functions of certain genes or players that may be important for regulation of different complex traits. And Why we use C. elegans also for memory studies, it is also important to emphasize that C. elegans, although it may seem as a simple organism that has only 1,000 cells, can actually form very complex forms of memory. So there are non-associative and associative learning that they are capable of doing. And in our lab, we are most, also in the short term, that is only a few hours, or long terms, that is a few days, which is a significant length of time for animals that only live around 7 to 8 days. We mostly use in our lab associative learning, and we focus mostly on negative conditioning. Why? Because negative conditioning is just, as we know from other model systems, it's very efficient. So sometimes it's just enough to do one training, and then the animals actually have these memories for a very long time. And for example, if you do negative chemoattractant conditioning in C. elegans, using two rounds of training, these animals are capable of remembering this association for actually 7 days. Of course, the problem that one encounters when one wants to study these age worms and their memory is that at that age, a lot of physiological processes are changed. So it's very hard to dissect what is like age dependent and what is actually the pure effect of this learning experience. So recently we have using negative associative learning and memory paradigm, we have conducted a transcriptomic study in C. elegans, where we followed up the short and long term memory and in terms of transcriptomic change, transcriptional changes in a transcriptome wide manner in C. elegans, and we could actually observe that the differentially expressed genes kind of cluster in three different groups. So there are early response genes, as we also know from like rat studies and so on. There are like intermediate to late response genes, and there there is also a third cluster that we kind of categorized as a late onset or late response genes. And importantly, the first cluster is completely CREB independent. If you are interested, you can look into this publication. While especially for the third cluster and the second cluster, these genes are predominantly CREB independent, as one would also expect. So when we looked at the data from this study, we actually realized that among the top candidates from the late onset genes, ANCAM gene popped out. And ANCAM gene, as most of you probably all know, it belongs to the immunoglobulin superfamily of glycoproteins. It's very important for the neuronal development, promotes outgrowth, targeting cell migration. It's also involved in synaptic plasticity. And there have been some reports previously suggesting that the changed or modulated regulation of ANCAM signaling is associated to neuropsychiatric or neurodegenerative disorders and cognitive impairment or, for example, age-related memory. So we were really interested then in following this up. So if you look how the profile of expression of the ANCAM looks after learning in the first 25 hours, you can see that it gets this peak around 4 to 5 hours after learning experience, but it remains significantly upregulated throughout the time. And we have data also up to 3 or 4 days, which you can look in this publication if you have more interest in that. So we follow this up with mutant animals that we generated, and we could also show that these effects, we could also replicate these effects in using the mutant animals as approach. We could also see that this was really dependent and tightly associated to long-term memory and to actual negative associative long-term memory. So then we performed a rescue experiment with three independent cell lines or worm lines, and we could show that reintroducing those rescue foreign genetic material in those lines rescues the memory phenotype. So having in mind also the very high conservation of ANCAM molecule from nematodes to humans, we also then tried to reintroduce human ortholog in those knockout animals, and we could also see that in all three different, transgenic animal lines, human ortholog rescued the observed phenotype along associated to long-term negative memory. So just to sum up the C. elegans part, I hope that I could show that that the verisimilar conditioning induces long-lasting temporal changes of NCAM1 gene expression. They are specifically associated with the deficit of the aversive long term memory. Chemotaxis, locomotion, learning itself, they were not affected in those animals. And positive long and short-term associative memory were also not affected. And furthermore, when we reintroduced the human ortholog, we could actually see that this saves this loss of function memory phenotype in those animals. So, knowing that the that there is a very high conservation on one side, that the human ortholog rescues the phenotype, but also that the ANCAM gene locus is extensively epigenetically regulated, and that those levels, when it comes in terms of expression of ANCAM gene in the periphery, were also reported to be linked to brain-related phenotypes and cognitive impairment, we decided to investigate the role of ANCAM in human memory now in in different populations of healthy and individuals and individuals with memory disorders. So we started again with the with this first study that I presented already, but now we had a sample of 568 young individuals that they were all examined by the by Illumina Infinium 450K array, and we also assessed expression using the Affymetrix HTA20 array, and then we used machine learning and code segmentation data to infer functional to infer methylation of different functional elements in the methylome and transcriptome of in this population. So what we could observe in this first population is actually that there was a strong association between the actual performance of correctly remembered emotional pictures and the DNA methylation of the ANCAM1 promoter region, so specifically to that ANCAM1 promoter region as defined by segmentation information. On the right, you can see how this correlation looked. It was a negative correlation. So furthermore, we could also show that there was a positive correlation between actually the expression, the median expression of the whole transcript, and the the actual memory performance. And we could also show that there is a negative correlation between those two markers, as one would expect. Furthermore, DNA methylation of the ANCAM1 promoter was also negatively correlated with recognition of negative pictures. And so we wondered then if having in mind, because this was all a short kind of term memory task, so they were assessed just a few hours after having this learning experience. So we wondered if we could actually observe these effects also associated to long-term memory. So in another population of around 330 young individuals that were a part of the EEG memory study, we performed a similar analysis, and there we had a delayed recall around 20 to 28 hours depending on the individual. And we could then actually observe the same effect when it comes to the general performance and when it comes also to negative content performance. And it was again specifically associated only to the promoter region of the ANCAM gene. Now, having in mind that we see here a predominant association with the negative content, and that based on animal studies and also based on this second population we investigated, it may be that these methylation changes or epigenetic changes are associated to the long-term effects of memory. We decided to investigate the DNA methylation status now in a third population, which is again this population of Rwandan genocide survivors that have been presented a few minutes ago. In that population, obviously, because they are genetically very different, we performed again a segmentation analysis, and we could actually see that the most significantly associated region was an adjacent promoter, which is in this population genetically the main promoter of the ANCAM gene as compared to the European descent population. And if you run a QTL analysis, actually, you would see that this is also very tightly genetically controlled. So there, there is genetic variation that determines probably binding and in the end kind of can be used to predict precisely the output of such epigenetic changes in terms of the expression of ANCAM gene. So we could also see that the DNA methylation and this specific alternative promoter was negatively associated with the actual sum of PTSD symptoms. Then furthermore, we could also see that these associations comes predominantly or only from intrusion symptom cluster and avoidance symptom cluster, but not hyperarousal. And this was again independent of the number of traumatic event types that individuals experienced. Last but not least, we could also show that the ANCAM1 alternative promoter DNA methylation and the trauma load show a significant interaction on PTSD lifetime risk, as it was the case with the glucocorticoid receptor gene. Okay, so a short summary of this second study. In the first Swiss sample, we could show the DNA methylation, the promoter flanking sequence of the ANCAM1 gene is negatively associated with the recognition performance of previously seen emotional pictures. Then we could also show that the expression of the ANCAM1 is likewise positively associated with the same recognition performance and negatively associated with the ANCAM1 gene DNA methylation. In the second sample, we came to findings that suggest that this can be extrapolated also to a bit longer memories, or let's say 24 hours actually after learning experience. And finally, in Rwandan genocide survivors, where we have traumatic memories that last for the for lifetime, we could show similar types of associations with the intrusion symptom clusters and also with the actual PTSD risk. So with this, I would like to conclude. I would like to acknowledge the groups of Thomas and Iris, Tatiana, for their wonderful work in Africa with those studies, and also to the two heads of the departments of molecular and cognitive neuroscience, Andreas Papazitropoulos and Dominic De Calva, and all my colleagues that contribute to those studies. And of course, to you for your attention. I'm now open for questions. And it's my dog.
So thank you so much, Anya, for this super nice talk and also showing how nicely animal and human studies can be combined to find interesting candidates underlying different disease. Other questions to Anya? Yes.
About this Rwandan study, I didn't understand which people you used as control, because as I understood, this happened to a particular nationality in Rwanda. Mm-hmm. So they all have similar genomes
Yeah, exactly.
Did you have exactly the same nationality not experienced in genotype?
No, we didn't. No, we didn't, because these are So this is a correlative research in Nature, so it's not really a group control. So what we did have, we had a population of genocide survivors, or let's say refugees that were in Nakivale refugee camp. And there, when you looked at their phenotypes, there is a net variation from zero symptoms to very high scores when it comes to categories, and also when it comes to the actual number of traumatic events experience. Of course, we introduced controls there. We controlled for ceiling effects because it's known that after a certain number of traumatic events, they all develop PTSD and so on. But in terms of actual case control study, this was not possible to do in this population. So the only, let's say, healthy study that we performed was this follow-up in a genetically different population, in the population of the European descent. Yeah.
I have a very general, thank you for a beautiful talk. I have a very general question. Of course, ultimately, we want to manipulate this specific sites.
Yeah.
Is there any way you're trying to do this work in your group? Or?
Well, sure. I mean, also Tanjay presented some of his work where he was focusing on the CRISPR technology. We are also conducting some of those experiments. It's possible now also to use CRISPR technology to do a targeted change of epigenetic state in a certain region. One can actually delete a certain CpG site, which is a more easier way to approach it, but one can also manipulate the epigenetic state itself. Of course, the problem is here that it's still heavily discussed, having in mind when we talk about glucocorticoids, it's really a timed activation of this glucocorticoid system that really matters for the development of those symptoms and so on. And so far, the studies focusing, giving different inhibitors and manipulating the GR axis were the most fruitful if this was done directly after trauma exposure, let's say in the ER unit or something like this. So I don't really, it's hard to predict how big the effect of such epigenetic manipulation would be. Because if one assumes we have perinatally determined HPA axis, let's say like that, via epigenetic change, it's really hard to assume if really changing one of its elements will kind of be able to reverse this acquired physiological experience that was there for 30 or 40 years. It's possible, but we have not done that still.
So you're saying, okay, I experience a life-threatening event,
yeah,
and then I have an unfavorable methylation pattern for this kind of experience. I store that in memory. And then even if I modify my methylation later on, I cannot erase that memory trace anymore.
Yeah.
Therefore, we cannot have really hope that there will be ever.
So, for example, it may be though possible to some reconsolidation, like some projects that you have been also conducting, where those memories are still kind of fragile and can be brought back to the fragile state, and then maybe with additional pharmacological manipulation, let's say like that, you would be able to make those memories less threatening, in sense that person would understand, have a better understanding of those memories, more rational understanding of those memories. But erasing them, I don't think that would be so simple, because actually what my understanding of, for example, this GR axis changes is that actually this affects how the memory is actually stored, how vividly it had been encoded, but it actually does not affect directly the fact if this memory is stored or not. And we have been discussing this last night. We also performed an animal follow-up study of that in using the inhibitory avoidance in rats, and we could there show that for different actually aspects of memory, amygdala and the whole noradrenergic system plays very important role, while, for example, context aspects and emotional aspects that one would expect. And there you can see that hippocampus and amygdala, they play a role even 2 months after the learning experience happened. And if you deactivate those two brain regions temporarily, the animals forget these aspects of memory. While the actual, let's say, factual context of memory, it's somewhere in the cortex, and this is intact by this blockade. If you measure the memory itself or the recognition 1 day later after this pharmacological inhibition is over, then the whole, let's say, context and emotional details of this factual memory is back and topped to this factual memory that is cortex dependent. Yeah. So I think it's very hard. But if you manipulate early, like in the ER, for example, when the consolidation phase is still not over, I think, and there are several publications proving that the effect of such treatment could be quite beneficial for trauma, after trauma experience.
So you can beat up your wife later on with the right medication, only by the medication pattern anyhow, the way you want.
Yeah, I would not dare to comment this. Yeah, and I think for sure it's really locus dependent. I mean, that's what we, you know, there is not a universal story. So I think our genome is very complex, and we cannot really draw lines and say, well, if this locus functions like this and with pharmacological, and there was recently this paper also that you have forwarded to me as well with changes in the hippocampal volume and so on. I mean, this looks to me very striking, and I would like to see if this gets replicated, because, you know, changes in hippocampal volume and the methylation status of the FKBP5 in such a short period of time seems really striking to me. Yeah.
Any more questions? Could you just comment a bit? In the first study in Rwanda, you saw some correlation between the CPG3.
Mm-hmm.
Methylation and in men,
yeah,
but not in women. I mean, but did the women also have symptoms?
Yes, of course. Of course, the symptoms were even more pronounced in women. So we had to also try to control that and so on. Well, it's just that it's known from the physiology, the regulation of the HPA axis, it's heavily affected by the hormone status and let's say many different aspects that are exclusively related to women physiology. We didn't have all this information really to dissect this properly, and rather than analyzing them all together and having this as a confounding variable, we decided to separately investigate this. But as you could see, actually also in healthy young individuals, the effect was similar, the same. And there are a lot of studies actually showing these sex differences when it comes to the actual performance with the emotional memory task, especially when we talk about negative content. And this goes in the line with this. And we know, for example, we also looked in that, for example, we had in this big study, we had in the fMRI study, we had also hormonal measurements, and we also published a publication showing really there is a strong effect of progesterone and estrogen, the actual association between cortisol levels and memory performance or recognition performance. Yeah.
And sorry, just to say, the symptoms could be what?
The symptoms for the PTSD?
That's what they had, this one.
Yes, exactly. So the symptoms are here. So these are there. It's a very complex disorder, and the symptoms are roughly divided in three different categories. So first one are those intrusive memories of traumatic events. So this is this unwilling remembering flashbacks of traumatic experiences that are not self-controlled, and they are just coming, you know, as flashes. Then avoidance of stimuli associated with trauma. These individuals, they associate a lot of, let's say, situations, places, objects with this traumatic experience. They try to avoid them, or hyperarousal, for example, somebody that was in war, or I had this as well after these detonations that I experienced, that when somebody would slam the door, I would sometimes get really aroused by that for the first few weeks after this experience, right? Okay.
Thank you.
just curious to see that you can observe these changes of methylation in saliva samples which contain Buchwald cells and white blood cells. What do you think is information transmitted to the neuronal cells? They would store this information to the saliva.
So I just want to emphasize that in actually, even if you correct for the cell composition, this effect remains the same in the second study where we had the whole methylome thing. And I think there are several layers of evidence at the moment that suggest that we can really also use peripheral samples to a certain extent to infer some changes in the brain. Some of the cells in the saliva itself, they have the same ectodermal origin developmentally, so not all of them, obviously. So that's... What was that?
They differed before the stress.
Yeah, this is actually... But as you saw, that the changes were not associated to the traumatic experience itself. They were primed much earlier. We don't know if they are primed perinatally, postnatally, or prenatally. This I can only speculate in those studies. And actually, there are some other studies, and also Thomas also showed this in some of his studies, that actually, there is this early life window that is quite more where these changes or these loci are much more suspective to a change than later on this doesn't happen. And then what is actually really important to say, and this brings me back to the beginning of my slide, is that genetics really plays a very, very strong role. And if you actually see, we also published this recently, end of last year, if you actually see in only, if you only take the really reproducible and valid measurements from these methylome studies, and then if you look at this subset of measurements, you would actually see that 80% of them, or even more, or 87% I think we had in the population of around 1,000 people, are genetically driven. So thus you also expect to see differences in the similar effects in the brain. And last but not least, there are many studies now showing that the intra-individual variation is still smaller than inter-individual variation. So this is also a very important aspect. But of course, this is loci dependent. And if you look at the, nervous system specific genes, for example, the NRSFI sites and so on, of course, it would be a completely different story, and it would be like black white, right? I completely agree on that, and that's the reason. The bottom line is, when we have a target and when we want to look mechanistically into that, we have to be very cautious, and each one of them treat independently. It's a novel story, and we really have to see how this reflects. Of course. The HPA system is a systemic system, and disorders in this system or dysregulation in this system is sensed also in blood as in the brain. So it may be that also this signaling primed the cells in saliva and so on. Yeah.
So if there are more questions, please keep them a little while. There will be more opportunities to talk to Vanya if you'd like to. Now we switch to Chris. Thank you.